Ontology. you remember when we made that slide?
Can you go
yeah, how many people have seen his slide and they were there?
Was Leo there? Are you serious?
No.
Leo wasn't there.
I think you and me. Then
title is by the title of the state.
Say that's the business purpose. What's the first plug?
Skip through Doug's presentation.
All right. That way into Doug's talk.
You should have used the quote from the Steve Goldman.
That's okay.
And sometimes you need those general endomains for knowledge. Like to find on this particular match, you need to know the things like F-A-7s or silver mounted weapons capable of knocking down the flying aircraft. So it's not just general knowledge, sometimes it's domain knowledge as well that's brought to bear to find these kinds of matches. And not just finding information, but also consistency checking information. So in this spreadsheet or relational database, in the second row, we have someone who appears to be hired before they were born, and listed themselves as their emergency contact, and the person they put as their significant other is different from the person who put them as their significant other, and so on. And basically, this doesn't violate the data type of the spreadsheets, but it violates common sense. Say, well, why wasn't it the responsibility of whoever put this table together, put this schema together, to preconceive all those potential constraints? Well, in reality, there's not one table. There are 50,000 and columns, and they're spread across 1,000 different tables across 100 different databases. And the people who put those different information structures together even knew about each other's existence. And the only reason you're able to spot these and see is because you know something about birth dates and hire dates and what it means to be an emergency contact and when you need to have one and the fact that, in general, people's significant others are symmetric relations and so on. And you can also use that not just to detect the inconsistencies, but to infer things. Like if you know the home address of someone, then you can guess at the home of the other,
Ruins it by saying, try searching the World Wide Web. So obviously,
Oh, the message is that without formal ontology, without the axioms to go along with the ontological term, you end up having the veneer of intelligence, the veneer of competence in much the same way that Alice and Eliza did, but without actually being able to answer users' queries. And if all you're doing is trying to find relevant web pages, that's just barely enough for applications like Google to be successful. Get into questions that require understanding enough to semantically combine two or three or four or five pieces of information from different places, then that's not enough, and you basically would fail utterly if you try to apply some non-formal ontological solution.
That's a good message. I think it might be more concentrated if you put these five pieces together.
Okay.
Here's the simple thing, but perhaps you're going to need something more hard.
Okay, that's a good idea. Okay.
Actually, in the same vein, are you? I was going to touch on the point that just talk about how it's going to be more intelligent about answering people's queries.
Yeah.
Do you ever get to the point of saying it's suddenly going to allow business systems to actually make queries? In other words, not helping people find answers, but
Okay. I mean, this is sort of simplified, but it's supposed to be simple.
No,
like totally disgusted by this. This is like the time to speak up. Not tomorrow.
There's too much here to present at the time. I think you have, maybe you don't need to overdo the motivation. You have a lot of different examples of the motivation before you get to the...
You can
cut them off.
Yeah,
okay. Most of them make similar points.
Okay, then I was going to go through something like this, where basically we organize terms in ontology and attach pieces of information, like rules, constraints, and so on, where they belong. Like surface vehicles can't control its altitude and so on. And then, if you inherit knowledge, so when you have a truck down there, you know, this truck can't control its altitude because of other things. It's a truck and so on, and it's a surface vehicle and so on. And secondly, you can move rules to the best place when you have a new rule, like water vehicles slow down in bad weather. That actually applies more to surface water vehicles. So you move it there, and then you see, oh, well, it applies more to surface vehicles in general. And now that we've stopped there, it also applies to this truck over here, even though that wasn't what the person was thinking about when she wrote that rule about water vehicles slowing down in bad weather. So that's sort of a point I wanted to make. And then the usefulness of stating this in as expressive a way as possible, if all you know is that there's some connection to individual vehicles and tracks, that's not as good as knowing that individual vehicles leave tracks, which is not as good as having some very precise logical interpretation. So here's a typical architecture where you have some knowledge base and reasoning modules and interfaces to other programs and to end users in English dialogue and to knowledge workers in some specialized knowledge working interfaces and to external web pages and databases by mapping their
comment about that.
Yes. Payment relationships like events happen in time. And sometimes a little bit more complicated, like if A causes B, then A happened before, it started before the start of B. Causes can't follow effects. Sometimes we have to have more complicated expressions that involve possibility operators, like the square box, which basically says if the map to anthrax, then it's possible that that exposure would cause an anthrax infection. Well, it turns out that there was a small error on the slide. what symbol would you like for possible?
Well, generally the diamond.
I tried, yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to try again for the diamond, but it didn't work quite as well. So the reason we use this logical representation is that it, among other things, is less ambiguous and it enables mechanically produce deductions. But less ambiguous, I mean things like here, you have an ambiguity about whether it's the same president or the same mother. In English, it looks pretty much hard to tell. But in logic, the order of quantifiers is different. And so, in fact, something which is ambiguous in English becomes less ambiguous in logic. So that one. And then what does it mean to represent it in logic? Basically, predicates, which you can think of as functions applied to arguments. So this just says 31 is an odd number. This says eagles are birds. This is a more complicated way of saying eagles are birds. And this is a more complicated rule that says each person has a mother who's a female person. And what do we mean by it can reason? People are familiar with things like if Socrates is a man and all men are mortal, then Socrates is a male. If you look at a slightly more complicated example from our system of Canacan, so there's a logical representation of it, which is not quite as funny, basically you have the system and it comes back with an actual argument for why Canacan, which you press the button, it can automatically translate data. Basically, are inanimate objects can't do partially mental events, and can for inanimate objects. can dance is partially mental, like if you don't have a mind or brain, how do you do the can-can? So again, we're not talking about incredibly deep arguments here, we're talking about fairly shallow reasoning. Two more complicated examples, one involving pro and con reasoning and one involving researching a hypothesis from an intelligence analyst. So in this one, basically, someone's asking for the pro and con argument for why ETA might have been responsible for a particular terrorist attack. And in this one, an analyst is basically researching who might have had a motive for Steve Kaviri's assassination. Interface to generate a question, even though they don't know logic, they're able to use this interface to produce behind the covers a very complicated logical expression, although they never see it. They just see snippets of English. It produces all sorts of answers, some of which are somewhat unusual, like Israel and the United States are behind it, but then you look at the sources and it's basically according to Al Jazeera and so on, which actually did say that Israel and America were behind that assassination. Western sources, they basically blame Syria. And if you look for why that's true, there's an argument like Syria opposed Lebanese economic reform, and Rafik Hariri might have advocated it. It's in blue because the system isn't sure about this. And so this is something the analysts can investigate. Then I was going to digress, and this may again be something that we put in a different place, on the importance of or the effect of different representations of representation makes certain things fast at the expense of other things being slow. And so that applies to natural language, that applies to algebraic equations and so on. So here's an extreme example of a natural language representation, a traditional representation of genealogical information. And if I ask you a question like, is Edward an ancestor of Sioux, after a few seconds you could get an answer, but it would be a lot faster if I just showed you the diagram where you can see that joints and neither one of an ancestor or descendant of each other. Here's another example where they have a natural language representation, but obviously the best way to solve this is to write down five equations and five unknowns and hand that to some linear equation solver. So is natural language a good representation? Well, there's a lot of it, but on the other hand, the meanings of words vary, not to mention all the ambiguity, and extremely inefficient and error. Especially if you have to combine, arithmetically or logically combine, multiple pieces of information represented that way. So there's no one correct monolithic ontology. There are going to be many, or equivalently, the ontology shouldn't be monolithic. You can use that latter by dividing it up into little contexts that were locally consistent. And there is a monolithic reasoning mechanism that's correct, and the theorem proving that deadly slow, you never would really want to do that unless you had to. Modern systems like have hundreds and hundreds of special purpose theorem provers and problem solvers, and almost always one of them is what's actually in control. You almost never call on the general theorem prover unless every single one of those is given up.
Another point, you describing what you do at site.
Well, because that's what I have the slides for.
You're talking about that removed the way it's done.
Yeah. Well, I tried to generalize this as much as possible to de-cyclify it and not make
it very obvious. It's like, I don't even know
what to do. What, a special purpose inference engine? Anyone who has any kind of but that's a specific example from our case, but I think a lot of people use special purpose reasoning.
That's fair.
I mean, as you started the session, maybe this should go someplace else. I agree. I'm not sure. First of all, my high-level impression is that you're waiting here trying to squeeze way too much material into small mind.
I think I have a
real. There's a real.
Keep that in mind. Think about at the end and in. Think about which bits of this you would take out.
Well, what are the 3 points you need?
Yeah, what are the main things you want to get across?
Then you can. Let me tell you. Let me tell you a little story about the man who
So I worked as assistants, and he asked an assistant to produce him a one-page summary of something. And so I worked for a week trying to cut this thing down to a page. And he couldn't do it. He got it down to a page and a half. So he said, I'm really sorry. I could only get it to a page and a half. And his boss said, oh, that's okay. He just threw away the second page. And that's what happens. If you give people more information than they take, they just stop, shut down at a certain point. And you don't control where they shut down. So if there are three points you want to make, heaven's sake, don't try and make more than three real points. Because that's just,
Okay, I'll try to think about that.
You made an analogy in viewing points. Yeah. You said here, don't put your action too high up, too high up.
I hear you.
Yeah.
One of the points has to be the upper college. Can I reread what's on the agenda?
Oh,
your piece is supposed to be the value of formal, comma, upper ontology. Bill's piece actually is overview of ontology, upper ontology, examples of new
The delta in my description was the word formal.
Right. The formal ontology.
But now that I see his presentation, I'm sort of ignoring
the first part of your talk does exactly make very well the point of why you would want formal
meaning. Okay, so let me keep some of those examples. Let me go on. What I'm going to do next, the last bit, was just to go through point that we want those numbers, even though these numbers are large, like hundreds of thousands of terms and millions of handwritten axioms, we actually want those numbers to be as small as possible. And in the case of like this disjointness, there are about 3 billion tight levels of disjointness assertions that Plate can prove. And all that, all those billions of things like no elk is a mouse, no elk is a can, and so on. Followed from a very small number of disjointness assertions and something related to what we call sibling disjoint collection.
This is another knowledge engineering point.
The idea is that we want, so maybe this is really more for you than for them, that you really want these numbers to be as small as possible. It would be trivial for us to say that we have 3 billion assertions by simply removing the axioms that enable us to do this in we don't want to have billions of assertions, we want to have a small number as we possibly can. And then I was going to possibly go through this diagram, which Chris and several of you have seen before, of like the way that we got the system built, the way that large ontologies got built, where we might to build it by learning automatically the knowledge in it, but the trouble is that learning occurs at the fringe of what you know, so when you're aware of the left edge of the curve, you can't learn much.
I don't think this is germane either.
Like they don't really care how it gets built.
Yeah, I don't think. I think not. Yeah.
All right. It's fine. Just keep going. Anyway, I'm also going to make the point that in the case of Cypher, we spent about 21 and a half years, about $75 million, and almost a personal length of time. So we're getting just a little bit past that crossover point. So that most of the effort in the company now dealing with natural language understanding and machine learning, not with manual knowledge. But again, maybe that's more interesting.
Well, that's final
Well, part of the message is that this is not something that people can do for $100,000 in 6 months.
And you don't want to redo it.
Yeah, we don't want to say that we are asking for
$20 million.
Well, no, this is basically that people are benefiting from vast amount of work that's been put in over the last few decades. Not everyone has to make all the same mistakes.
You can reuse this.
You're right. You either reuse it or you can at least learn from some of the mistakes.
They might say, well, if you can already do these great things now, then yeah, I guess maybe we don't need it.
Yeah, why do we have to tell them that's true?
Well, ontologies for different domains, they're different ontologies for different subspecies. And just like we have lots of different micro-theories in sight, there needs to be a lot of additional, from my point of view, micro-theories, and from your point of view, ontology.
One thing that can help, and I'm kind of all confused, and everything is a model we're talking about, the case that I'm building. I sit back and say, what am I actually trying to say? So each slide, I just write, what am I really trying to convey here? I have 72 sentences. And then I look at all the repetition and all the ones that really don't matter to my
point.
And then you kind of jumble it around, and then it's like, here's a nice clear message. But as you were going through your talk, I was kind of making a few notes.
That's good.
Knowledge engineering point. What is this?
Many
of the points are.
I'm going to eliminate some of the knowledge engineering points. Because that's not going to be the public interest. And from their point of view, they don't really care as long as it works.
Yeah. The other way to do it is what Matt says. You can do the man's pull. Start with the few points you want to make. And only put things in.
I did actually pull out most of the knowledge engineering points that went into the sermon. So then I'm going to just rapidly go through a small portion of the knowledge base, giving a set of dozens of ways that things can that happen in time can relate to each other. And even though something is vague as two things don't temporally intersect, there's enough to tell you things like, well, then they weren't getting married to each other.
This is really good material because it talks about
So see if you still hear that way. Seven questions. This is like different ways that something can be a part of something can be a part of something else. We have about 23 different meanings of in, meaning physical containment, because the way that the people are in this room is different from the way the air is in this room, which is different from the way the wall paper is in the room, and so on. So we have lots and lots of different ways of in. Something is nailed versus screwed into a wall is different. And there are questions like what happens if I pull on this, where you'll get the wrong answer if you don't distinguish the two different kinds of in. About 11,000 kinds of events that are fairly axiomatized that actually have pieces of knowledge about what they mean, not just the names of them and so on. About 400 relations between an event and the participants in the event. The things which are created or used up or perform an event or are acted on in an event and so on.
This is getting, I think, way too specific into a lot of middle level things. It's all great detail. I think the message of this talk is about upper ontology, the two or three upper things. And then, again, because you don't have anywhere near the time to go through all these slides, you're going to have about 20.
Although this is actually about information about emotions, you find it really clear whether you consider emotions about ontology or not. It probably says more about you than about emotions. Hundreds of emotions and information about what emotions are contrary to what other emotions. Lots of different relations about pieces of information, like someone believes something, someone has a goal. True. Someone's afraid that something's going to be true. Someone remembers something a certain way. Someone has a certain opinion about something, and so on. These are complicated to represent logically, but important to represent. 4,000 kinds of devices and lots of information about device states.
What are you trying to convey, though?
These are just a few of the hundreds of thousands of terms. Here I'm just sort of depicting sort of like a few of very
so after so my question is after people have seen these 6 or 10 what message do you want them to go away with?
There are a vast number of moderate size ontological decisions that have to be made in putting together an upper ontology. For example, in the case of weather phenomena, we as normal human beings in our society today have two views of like a rainstorm, a thunderstorm. One is looking down from above from a satellite, and the other is looking out the window at ambient conditions. And those are, in effect, two different kinds of things, and yet still the same thunderstorm. And if you only represent the thunderstorm in one of those two ways, then you'll get the answers to an awful lot of questions wrong that people are able to get the answers to.
That's a good tested, and you could make that point two of these 8 or 10 times.
So one slide.
No, I mean the whole
slide and joint the rest of it.
The whole last
10 or 20. Oh, you mean the point about the ontological element. Well,
all right.
The information bearing thing is, I think, maybe a little bit too subtle. It's probably not bad for you guys to. This is basically the point that if you've got a book, and then there's this physical object, which is this information-bearing thing.
If you go through it,
of course, all of this is
zero.
It depends